This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. Of course, our website home, as always, placetobenation.com. And whether you're downloading us through the website or you're finding us on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, however, wherever, we thank you for listening. Got a very special guest this week. He's the author of the book Lion's Pride, Turbulent History of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Chris Charlton is going to join us later on. He's an Englishman living in Japan, has been for quite a while now. And he's written this fantastic book, which I loved and sort of celebrates New Japan Pro Wrestling and its 44-year history and even kind of how wrestling in Japan got started. Very, very fascinating tale. I just, again, fell in love with the book. And so can't wait to have him on to talk about that and all things in the world of pro wrestling. He knows a lot about a lot of stuff. He's not just a fan of Japanese wrestling. He sort of has a big picture view, which everybody is taking now. Of course, we're recording this before the big event of WrestleMania. So by the time you're listening to this, we know that WrestleMania is in the books, and we know that it was a huge event and certainly one that everybody is going to be talking about. And the next time that we get together with a brand new episode of the Kevin Kelly Show, which will be in 2 weeks, JR and I will get together and we'll recap everything that happened throughout the huge weekend in Dallas, including Ring of Honor's two events, NXT, the Hall of Fame, any other news and notes that are coming out of WrestleMania, and of course the big event itself. Whether or not it turns out to be the success that WWE hopes it will be, to be determined, and certainly we'll find out what happens after that. But that'll be in a couple of weeks' time. But coming up for New Japan and Ring of Honor, very busy month of April and then May, one of the reasons I wanted to have Chris on now, I kind of want everybody sort of to get primed for this, because over the next few weeks of Ring of Honor Wrestling Television, we're going to be airing matches from, well, we've been showing you matches from our Las Vegas taping, which feature the stars of New Japan. Then we go from there to reliving the matches that took place at Honor Rising in the month of February. So a lot of great matches between Ring of Honor and New Japan. And then more action continues, because by that time we'll be in the month of May and we'll be all set to go with the Global Wars pay-per-view and then a whole string of TV from following that. It's just going to be a great, great all the way through until June. Your fill of Ring of Honor stars with New Japan stars. It's going to be a lot of fun and a great, great time. I'm going to be very busy on April 10th, of course. It's Invasion Attack for me for New Japan Pro Wrestling. So we're very excited about that. And so I'm looking forward to calling that big shindig. It's going to be a lot of fun with my pal Steve Corino back in the saddle again. That'll be a lot of fun. Right now, with that in mind, we dial him up here on Skype, and we're calling Japan, and here we go. And as promised, our very special guest at this time is the author of a book that really has helped me in my fandom and my announcing for New Japan Pro Wrestling. The name of the book, Lion's Pride, The Turbulent History of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and the author is Chris Charlton, and he joins us here on the Kevin Kelly Show. This is great, Chris. We got a famous author on. We're like big time now. How are you?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about famous. I don't know about famous. When the book came out, it was I checked on the Amazon page, and it was like, this is the number one best-selling wrestling book on Kindle. And I was like, oh, shit, this is amazing. Then like you scroll down, you look on the macro side. It's like, okay, of all books on Kindle, it's something like 151,000 or something. Yeah, it's a niche kind of fame that I think I have, but no, that's all good. It's more than I had before.
You know, you're like the fastest swimmer out of people who don't swim. It's
yeah, it's the world's tallest midget kind of
right.
Thing. Yeah,
but okay. So as we record this, you are in Japan. You live in Japan, but yet you have a distinctly English accent. So what is this? Are you putting on a fake voice, Chris? What is the deal? How did you wind up in Japan?
No, God, I think my accent's nearly all but gone at this point. But yeah, I moved out here 10 years ago, just coming out of school when I finished university. And I was like, well, what should I do with this degree that I have no use for, really? And so it became this thing. I never knew you could do it, but you could teach English at at conversation schools in Japan. And they're like, well, we'll fly you out there. And I thought, well, whatever, this might be a year and that'll be that, and I have this out my system. Yeah, it turned into a lot more than that, and I took on a teaching career, and now I'm teaching the elementary school, and I have a mortgage and a family and all this stuff, and I can't see ever going back. So yeah, everything sort of snowballs as life does, I suppose.
Now we'll talk about the book and how it was put together and some of the and some of the stories from the book. It was a great help for me. But how did you become a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling? I would assume it was when you still lived in England, or did you just come onto the product when you moved to Japan?
Yeah, it was really when I was in England, and it was most of my fandom of wrestling comes from just bonding with my brother, and like he was more into it at first, and so when he moved out from my parents' house, he'd come over on weekends and just bring a random wrestling show, and it could be anything from the RoboCop Sting fiasco to something much better, and we'd just sort of bond over that. And I think my first dalliance with Japanese wrestling, I think like an awful lot of people, it was the 94 Super J Cup, which has just taken on this legendary status. I think like every Japanese wrestling fan from of a certain age, from a certain era, that was their sort of first hit of that sort of crack pipe, I guess. And yeah, it snowballed from there. So yeah, it sort of went all around. That was kind of in the early 2000s, when New Japan was beginning to enter this rough phase, but there was also like lots of other places springing up. So I was watching a lot of Noah at that time, and Toryumon becoming Dragon Gate, and that kind of thing. And so that really sparked. That was part of why I was intrigued with coming over to Japan, and everything went from there really.
What were you surprised? Because the book was, and again, I can tell you this now. I've made two flights to Japan. I'm getting ready to make a third. I've read the book several times on flights. I've probably read it five times altogether, and it's the story of the rise, the fall, and the rise again of New Japan with a couple of peaks and valleys in the middle. Got off to a rough start after Inoki left JWA and Tokyo Pro, I believe it was called. That didn't exactly go. And so a lot of peaks and valleys in the history of New Japan. Were you surprised as you did the research in the book at just how turbulent the times have been since the company's inception 44 years ago?
One thing that surprised me, and it might just have been sort of confirmation bias on my part, but it I never really bought into this idea of a lot of wrestling promoters or a lot of wrestling people saying that, oh, the business works in cycles. And like, I never really myself bought into that, because I kind of think that's an easy excuse. But when I was writing this, and I just thought it might be easier organizationally to split this into 5 years apiece, it was genuinely surprising how easily, like, the book came together in 5 year chunks of how things suddenly seemed to change in the middle and at the end of every decade. And I think, like, that's where we are now in New Japan. I did some stuff for, you know, friends we have at voicesofwrestling.com, and I wrote for their annual New Japan book that they put out. They put out a yearbook every year. And I put together this thing last year of, oh, it kind of seemed like 2015 was status quo, and maybe it's the middle of this decade. There isn't this big change in New Japan. And then suddenly this January, everything changed, and everything is in the process of changing again. And it seems to be at the midpoint of every decade that we have, like, these big peaks and valleys for, you know, for better or for worse.
Okay, so the book kind of begins and ends with Wrestle Kingdom 9. And if you were to write an addendum or an additional chapter for where the company is post WrestleMania 10 and the departures of AJ and Nakamura and Gallows and Anderson, where would you sort of point the divining rod, and what direction would you be pointing for New Japan?
It's difficult because I think, like, There's a lot of push and pull in both directions. That I think from the business standpoint, Bushiroad, who own the company, are making this big push of, okay, this phase in our business is over. This recovery phase is over. Now we're onto bigger and better things. We're onto perhaps potentially making a public offering within the next decade or so. But on the other side, from the creative standpoint, there's a lot more in the way of, well, we've had perhaps a creative boom, and now we have to deal with this other challenge where we perhaps don't have the pat hand that we have had, but it's the same. I think, like, necessity breeding invention. I think, like, the last sort right. of 3-4 months of New Japan have been way more, you know, even more exciting than anything we've seen in the last year. So it is this thing on the one hand of, well, we've been hit and hit hard, but we're sort of rallying behind that and coming out well creatively. And then from a business standpoint, where do we go from here? It seems there is this push and pull where there is such a divide that perhaps you don't get in WWE so much, of creative and business both wanting different things. And again, that can work out well or badly.
Yeah, I think it's not so much a factor with WWE, because business is one thing, creative is another, but yet the business and the creative are all controlled by the same person. So yeah. The financials seem to be... I think that's a lot of good creative accounting, able to make the books look right so that it makes the investors happy. But it you can't belie the fact that, you know, the product is not where they want it to be. It's sort of stagnant to, you know, a lot of guys are not being over. But it seems like, you know, and you talk about necessity being the mother of invention. You know, certainly we saw that with Kenny Omega and his rise. Was he... In your estimation, is he the right guy for that spot? Was it the right time for Omega?
I think I've always sort of had a fondness for Kenny. And I think, like, he's always, since being here for DDT, since before coming into New Japan, like, I've always felt that he's had... He's had a very unique approach to wrestling in Japan, and because he's been so sort of immersed in the culture and that side of it, I always think there's been a lot of money in Kenny Omega, because, I mean, he's a phenomenal talent, but not only that, he knows how to integrate I think from a behind-the-scenes standpoint and in front of the camera potentially as well, I think like the biggest shame with Kenny Omega in New Japan right now is that they're not letting him speak, because the guy speaks perfectly fine Japanese. And I think that he's able to make so many good connections. I think that that time will come where he can be big money for New Japan by interacting directly with the audience. So yeah, I've always felt his had that potential in him, and his you know, such an interesting character as well, because you have that sort of split personality dynamic almost of you have the sort of more goofy Kenny Omega, and you have the more psychotic, dangerous Kenny Omega, and you don't quite know which one you're going to get on a given day. I think that's like definitely an attractive proposition.
Reading the book, Lion's Pride, I sensed, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Prince Devitt was your favorite.
I like Devitt as well. Yeah, my one claim to fame in an abysmal sort of pseudo pro wrestling career was that I was once in a battle royal with Fergal Devitt in
what?
A town hall in Kent in front of 30 people.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, so I have a fondness with him, and I talked briefly with him years and years later, and obviously he didn't remember me, I don't think. But, yeah, I mean, Devitt, again, he's kind of from a different standpoint of Kenny Omega, had a different approach, but had this similar sort of depth to his character. And I always think that's always something when it comes to sort of foreign wrestlers in Japan, foreign wrestlers really everywhere. It's something that all eyes are on Shinsuke Nakamura this weekend, and it's going to be interesting to see that now we are in a much more sort of open and multicultural age. I'm interested, and I want to see these foreign people in a foreign land that have depth to their character, and that aren't either the blue chip smiling babyface or the, you know, the I know speak your language heel. You know, I'm always interested in guys that show more than that, and I think Kenny and Fergal have shown that in different ways over the years.
Yeah, they certainly are very good at expressing themselves. And I remember when WWF at the time hired Taka Michinoku. Mm. And so we had Taka at the office in Stamford, Connecticut, and Vince and Victor Quiñones and Taka and someone, maybe Yamaguchi-san was there, maybe. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But, you know, it was sort of like a quasi-press event, and it was a work, but I asked a legit question. I said, can Taka get over without speaking English? And they all looked at me and looked at each other and looked at Taka and looked at me and said, well, of course, and he's working on his English, aren't you? And he just smiled and nodded, yes, yes, yes. And they had no intention on making him anything of depth at all. He was just going to be what he was, and that was it. And it's, you know, to me, that's always been a shame, but it's that they take such a negative or just a myopic view of things there. I hope that they do. We are in a multicultural world, and they're a public company now, and I certainly hope that they broaden their mental horizons to open themselves up to allowing somebody to get over from a foreign land.
Yeah, and well, from the other end, I think like Riki Choshu said this about Nakamura as well, is that Nakamura has like this almost, he has such amazing physical charisma, but he has like this, you know, he's almost like Dusty Rhodes in a sense, where he has this ability of, I'm not necessarily like you, but I can speak to you. And that if Nakamura, you know, that Dusty Rhodes was, was a white American male, but like he was able to communicate with a much more diverse audience. And that if Nakamura even, if he has an opportunity to speak, even with his somewhat broken English, then I think people, you know, Choshu was saying that he thinks that people will just go, oh yeah, man, this guy sounds interesting. He seems unique, and that he'll go from there. I think Nakamura has the best shot of really anybody, even though that's a slim pool, at least from a WWE perspective. But
yeah. I think he. It'll be very interesting to see what he does. And of course, the next big event for New Japan Pro Wrestling is April 10th, an Invasion Attack, as Naito goes after the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, challenging the champion Okada. So Tanahashi, Okada, Naito? Is it Naito's time? What do you think?
Naito's saying all the right things. Naito has just been the most interesting guy to watch really over the last year. And he's almost, I think the most apt comparison has been to Naito really becoming, to more Western fans, like a CM Punk kind of figure, where he is like, I guess if you were going to say which side of the fence he's on, he's kind of a heel. He works heel. But he has legitimate sort of feelings and a discontent and a legitimate sort of reasoning behind everything. And he's able to sort of, drop those pipe bombs, so to speak. And Naito, I literally just got done reading an interview with him with Gong Magazine, and, his sort of standpoint was, well, Tanahashi lost to Okada at Wrestle Kingdom 10, and it was kind of defined as this, okay, it's the dawning, this is where the next stage is. But Naito's kind of saying, well, the next stage is really when he wins that title. Because since from 2011 to 2016, only three people have held that belt. It was Tanahashi, Okada, and AJ Styles. And so when, if Wrestle Kingdom 10 is the end of that era of saying, well, Tanahashi has done his best to carry that company and maybe it's time for him to, go back into the background for a little bit. The real dawning of this new era is when, okay, there needs to be new sort of main characters, for this chapter. And Naito saying that he would be one. And I think again, when it sort of comes to that sort of next 5-year cycle, if I was writing another chapter in the book, it would be, yeah, over the last 5 years, the main characters were Okada, Tanahashi and AJ Styles, perhaps Nakamura as well. Whereas from here, it's Okada, Naito, who else? Well, we'll see. Maybe Shibata perhaps.
And Shibata, very interesting because of his, you know, leaving, not wanting to be a you quoted him in the book, a salaryman wrestler, leaving, you know, I guess in the midst of a push and at one point not looking back, but then returning because of ownership at the time. Was it Kidani who said, hey, let's bring him back, and didn't tell anybody?
Yeah. So Jado and Gato, who were still booked at the time, they had no clue, you know, until Shibata showed up all those years ago. And that really, I think, it was part of this transition period where Kidani and Bushiroad had just bought the company. And there was a lot of... It was a difficult transition, I think, especially because Kidani is such a devoted wrestling fan and he is a sort of slavish admirer of the Vince McMahons and Eric Bischoffs of this world. And he sort of foresaw himself as being a guy that would have a hand in creative and be in front of the camera as well as behind the scenes. And it was really sort of things like that like bringing back Shibata and Kazushi Sakuraba as well, without Gato's sort of foreknowledge that sort of necessitated this clean break of, okay, we have our business end, we have a creative end, and never shall the twain meet in theory, at least.
And that's one of the big differences between New Japan and WWE, or WCW in its past, was that the controlling forces had a hand in creative, to the detriment of the company. And the further that Vince gets away from it, the more successful it can become. And we're seeing that now. And I'm reading some of your translation of Naito's recent interview. And if you want to, Chris does a fantastic job of bringing his skills as a translator, not just to the, as he's teaching English to Japanese children in his now home of Japan, but he also will smarten you up to all the things that are going on Twitter, and you can follow him at ReasonJP. So that's it. And Chris, of course, has written this fantastic book, which I guess I personally just want to thank you, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this show, because you have no idea how much your book helped me in preparing for Wrestle Kingdom 10.
I really appreciate that. I think I was just really surprised, and it sort of came from that where I'd been doing for a long time stuff for the Fight Network and Live Audio Wrestling over in Canada. We have a monthly podcast called Japanese Audio Wrestling, me and W.H. Park. And that it really sort of sprung from there being, at the time when we started that podcast, just really no information in English about Japanese wrestling, even though things were sort of starting to take shape of there starting to be more international expansion. And now we're at the age where everybody can watch anything. But there isn't enough sort of background information, and we sort of had listeners sort of write in and say, well, it's great that you're letting us know about what's happening right now, but you know, I'd really like to know more about the history of it. So it for me to start writing about it, it really just was, well, if I don't do it, somebody else is going to. So this is my shot to sort of tick off a bucket list item. And I'd never say that my book is a sort of complete history. I think there's an awful lot more stories to be told. If it's a starting point and it helped sort of spark interest and spark conversation, then that's all good. So yeah, and I'm just really glad that it's of use to anybody, let alone
it kind
with a voice.
I called the first show. I did King of Pro Wrestling in October. Mm. And I said to people that I've talked to after the fact, I didn't know what I didn't know until I knew I didn't know it. Mm. And so after the first one, then I was like, okay, now I know the direction that I need to go, and I really just need to get immersed in the history and just sort of bathe in it and understand it and start to dig into the culture more and try to understand where the athletes come from and how they're brought into the business and why and what's important, because that was what I thought I think the audience would get from me more than just spot calls and 1-2 kick out. Just to add some depth to what they're doing to explain it, the hows and the whys. Like, I'm fascinated. Like I've got to go visit the dojo. I'm fascinated by that. Whole system of training and how it's morphed over the years. It was pretty brutal back in the day, and you highlighted, you know, the need for change and some of the leaders, you know, Tanahashi, of course, being on the front lines of that, you know, helping to usher in a new era of training athletes with, you know, stern, tough love, but care and safety as well.
Yeah, and it's such everything's a fundamentally different culture that I think just even one thing that it's difficult for sort of new fans to a new sort of approach to this medium. And it might be a challenge for some people to just mentally get into Japanese pro wrestling in the same way that it's a challenge to mentally get into Lucha, which is still something that to this day I can't quite necessarily wrap my head around. But I think there's a lot of cultural differences just in the way of people telling stories, how people lay out stories and put them across. So, I mean, for instance, a typical Western story has a 3-act structure. And that's something you see if you watch a typical wrestling match, you're able to break that down and look at, you know, that kind of thing. It's a shine. It's a comeback, and you know, it's shine heat comeback or whatever. Where in Japan, the typical Japanese narrative structure that you're taught in schools is that there's four acts. So there's just from the initial basis of this is how a story works, then that obviously is going to change the psychology of how a pro wrestling match works, which again makes a change in the story that the announcers are telling. And it's so interesting. I think now, especially with you have this rare opportunity now where you can watch. I watched Wrestle Kingdom 10 three times. I watched it once live in person. I watched it once with Japanese commentary. I watched it once with English commentary. And then presumably somewhere down the road, you can watch it again on Access with another set of English commentary. But it's interesting doing that and seeing how the different approaches of relating what's happening in the ring and how different they were. And I thought like the difference between King of Pro Wrestling and Wrestle Kingdom from a viewing standpoint, I thought it really was night and day. And you guys did a really, really honestly, genuinely good job. But it was so interesting, especially in the last two matches on Wrestle Kingdom 10, just how different, not necessarily better or worse, but how the different the takes were between the English and Japanese commentary on those two main events. It was really fascinating.
I know that there was something that we did that the Japanese didn't do. Mm. And again, not saying right or wrong, in AJ and Nakamura's match, we might have been tipped off, but anyway, AJ feigned the back injury,
yeah,
which then led into the heat.
Yeah.
So I thought we had a little bit of home field advantage on that one. You know, I kind of, that was something that I've broken down some of those barriers, because I think they kind of exist to where the announce teams kind of stay over there and wrestlers are over here. Mm. I'm like, no, I want to talk to the wrestlers. I want to know their stories.
Sure.
I gotta have some reference here. So I think we get a little clued in as to what might be transpiring, but, it's fascinating, just all fascinating stuff to me. And I think if somebody said to me, hey, Kevin, you have a choice. You can only ever announce in the U.S. or in Japan. You have to pick one. I think at this point I might pick Japan. It's just, I loved it. I love being there. I just, you know, as soon as I got there. And I've traveled all over the United States. I hadn't traveled too much internationally. But as soon as I got there, I was like, oh, my God, I love this place. It's amazing. Did you feel that connection when you first visited Japan?
Yeah, I think so. It was surprising, you know, sort of people say, oh, well, did you ever have a sort of culture shock or a homesickness? And I never really did. Like, I sort of found myself sort of assimilating reasonably quickly and just feeling much more comfortable. And I kind of think that I get it. If I go back to the UK now, I get a lot of reverse culture shock and immediately feel that, you know, a week or 2 weeks over there is enough for me before it does feel, you know, like I'm not quite where I belong. And it's strange how those things work out. But
well, I know, listen, the next thing that we need to do, and this is a business that you and I could run. Nobody else is doing this. And I'm telling you, we're going to make a lot of money. I think we need to set up tours for Wrestle Kingdom. And we fly, have people pay us to set up the flight and the hotel and everything like this, and set them up on tours of the, you know, touristy things to do and tickets to the show and the whole deal. And we'll make a lot of money, because I think that there is a big audience out there would love to travel to Japan, especially for Wrestle Kingdom. They can't all stay at your house, Chris. You don't have that much.
No, it's not going to happen. No. But I got another kid on the way in June.
I know some people. I don't know that many people. But I think I think the audience is growing, and I wanted to, is newjapanworld.com, is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? Is there any negative to it at all?
The negative is this perspective of if we build it, then people will come. And people haven't, really. And so
why
that's the
that?
Sort of...
Why, in your opinion, have they not come?
I think there's a lot of factors there. But I think... For me, personally, I subscribe to New Japan World. I have a family. I have a job that, you know... I mean, you know, as someone who has children, like you get in the door and it's, okay, well... get the children fed, put the kid in his bath, get him to bed, and there's sort of household chores and things like that. Eventually, you have time to sit down, to plunk down on the couch for maybe an hour. And when you do that, yes. it's an awful big ask. Price is never the issue. It's time. And so here am I thinking, I don't subscribe to WWE Network right now. But I was thinking, is it really, I want to see Nakamura and Sami Zayn this weekend, but is it really, should I really pay this amount of money where I get everything just for the sake of this one match? Where it seems bizarre, doesn't it? That before yeah. in the past, $9.99 for a pay-per-view show. That's amazing. Of course, like that's a no-brainer, but for some reason, $9.99 for this pay-per-view and everything. It seems like a waste of money because I'm never going to watch this. I don't have any interest in WrestleMania this year. So I'm not going to watch that. I don't really, you know, I might sort of doubt if I had a lot of time, I might watch the interview contents and things like that. So it becomes very difficult. It's not just a price proposition. It becomes this thing of, how comprehensive you are. I think it might be good to have an a la carte option there as well, where, okay, if you want to pay 500 yen, then you just get Invasion Attack. And that would be a jumping on point for people. And then perhaps they can see more of the content there as well. I think what they are doing really well is kind of creating this catch-all, because the worst thing to happen is what is happening, where everybody has their services, where you know, you have a WWE Network and you have a TNA streaming thing, and you have in the UK RevPro has one, and Progress has one, and CMLL has one, and New Japan has one, and that's not good for anybody. The best thing to do would be to consolidate that, which I think New Japan are kind of doing their best with, having some select Ring of Honor content on there, some select indies stuff on there. They showed the Tenryu retirement match. They showed a Kai and Tai Dojo card recently as well. So they're making those connections where, and I think that's the best approach where, I mean, for example, from a Ring of Honor perspective, if I know they just had Kushida just wrestled ACH recently, and it might be a thing of, well, okay, Ring of Honor has exclusive rights to this for a certain period, but eventually this will show up on World as well. And then it becomes this thing of, well, I don't want to pay for every single, you get subscription burnout of WWE and New Japan World and Netflix and all of this other stuff. Whereas, you know, I can watch this stuff eventually, but everybody gets paid in the end. You know, I think like that's the best approach. It's a difficult process, not just for wrestling, but for all media right now.
I know that as new, and again, I think there needs to be more English content for the Western audience. And I've talked to them about it. I've shared my thoughts, and hopefully we can get there. I do want to encourage everybody to go to Amazon right now, Amazon.com. In fact, you can link to Amazon directly through the Place to Be Nation page, placetobenation.com, and you can click on the Amazon link and go right there. And I want you to type these two words in, Lion's Pride, and the book will come up. And you order the book, and Chris Charlton will become your favorite author of books about the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, I think we're just sort of coming up to a couple of big weekends in wrestling, between at this weekend, WrestleMania, obviously, and then all of a sudden Invasion attacks upon us next week. I will say if people are kind enough to listen to this podcast, starting now-ish, when's this going up? This weekend?
This isn't going to go up until next week, so it'll be
okay.
A week from tomorrow, a week from yesterday.
Week from yesterday. Okay, so starting a week from yesterday.
This coming Monday night.
There you go. Monday night. Okay, so right after WrestleMania. So we'll go from Monday night until after Invasion Attack, let's say April the 11th. Then we'll have a spring sale on Lion's Pride. If you get the Kindle version of the book, which is the only thing that I can sort of slash prices on easily, then you'll be able to pick that up for $4.99 instead of the usual $9.99. So hop on that.
Do it. And then make sure you go onto Twitter and you follow Reason JP and you shower Chris with love and praise. You ask him for translations, how to. So now, okay, proper way, if I was to see you in public, to where I, because again, it's what, 9:50 a.m. your time?
Yep.
I would say, Ohayo gozaimasu, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Very
exciting. Yeah.
Very good. I'm trying. I'm learning. it just simple conversational Japanese is amazing. It's wonderful. I also applaud you for the work that you're doing in teaching English. Mm. You know, I hope you're not teaching him a bunch of Cockney slang like Nigel McGuinness knows. You know, because he knows a bunch of different ways to say different things in the.
I heard some talk on some of my some friends I have on the indie side of wrestling of the legends of the Necro Butcher English Conversations call.
See?
Where he sort of produced a generation of sort of nappy effing and blinding and not
he's
much
a, else. He's one of once in a lifetime guy. But again, Chris, I just want to thank you for your work on the book. What's next? What are you going to be? Are you going to be writing about something else? Do you have anything else lined up? Movie version? You as the star, of course.
Be nice, wouldn't it? I think I'm sort of doing a lot of transitions in life. I just got a new job, and I'm expecting another son later this year. So I'm dealing with that stuff. But one thing that I've sort of started putting some talks together with a few certain people that I can't name, but I'm interested more in not perhaps the history, but a lot of the human stories that there are that just don't escape Japan because of the language barrier and because of all these things. So perhaps something more, not necessarily from a New Japan perspective, but something more from the fringes of wrestling and thinking about the people that are behind that. And it really sparked, I know coming later this summer, there's a fantastic documentary coming out on the great Sasuke, which I managed to get a screener of and I watched over the weekend. And it's that kind of thing that I think is fascinating, that these human stories that are less in the main public eye, even in Japan, but a little bit more out there on the fringes is fascinating to me.
Well, we look forward to that. And again, take advantage of the offer that Chris is generously giving to listeners of this podcast. Between now and April 11th, for Kindle download, his book, Lion's Pride, available for download. He's slashing the price all the way to $4.99 because he's a big fan of this show and of yours truly, and he wants everyone to read his book and to proselytize and to become one with him and to see things his way. No, it's just great because I thought it was so even-handed. You were even nice to Simon Inoki, who seems like a more charming version, a less charming version than like Jim Herd or other villains in wrestling, you know? It seemed like he had absolutely nothing going for him except his last name.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He was in a difficult position. He was sort of captaining a struggling ship. And that's something, you know, I mean, I think if you know, I had the audience, you know, if I was hailed by the emperor and, you know, I had a sit down, I really like to sort of really poke inside Antonio Inoki's head, you know, in the same way that I think a lot of people want to get inside Vince's mind and just figure out all the craziness that exists in there. You know, I'd like to poke around with Inoki.
Absolutely would be fascinating. Well, Chris, I want to thank you very much for your time. We'll have you back on the show, hopefully before the birth of your next child. Good luck and God bless, and I hope all is well. And thank you again for your wonderful book, and thanks for joining us here on The Kevin Kelly Show.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Well, that was, again, I hope everybody enjoyed that interview. I know I did, and the book is a great read. And I, as I said to Chris during the interview, it's a 14-hour flight to Japan. From the United States. So you run out of movies to watch. I don't sleep on planes. I don't know what it is with me. I've been in wrestling 25 years and I don't sleep on planes. I might catch a few wings here and there. So I needed something really to occupy me. And that's why this book was so great. And the electronic version, it's really nice of him to give listeners of this podcast a $5 deal on it. So make sure you take advantage of that. $4.99 for placetobenation.com. Fans and listeners, you could just go right through placetobenation.com, right there to the old Amazon, and download the book, Lion's Pride. So, as I said earlier on, we have a lot of ground to cover when next we join you with a new edition of The Kevin Kelly Show. JR and I will be back together, and we will recap the entirety of the whole WrestleMania weekend experience, plus the Raw that followed, which is always a usually an amazing show, and we'll see how the new wrestling year unfolds for the WWE. We'll see what's up with NXT. We'll recap the Hall of Fame. We'll talk about everything that's going on in the world of professional wrestling. But that's it for this edition. Thanks again to Chris Charlton, our special guest, the producer extraordinaire Justin Rosero, and all of you for listening. This is Kevin Kelly for The Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation, our website home, placetobenation.com.
Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had a strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cox.
Then people would be more inclined to buy the network and watch the shows.
I'd buy the network for a happy ending.
I do not know where Steve Austin is. He saw the gun. He saw the gun and he left. Oh my God, he's...
I would never have thought Rolling Stone. I mean, unless I killed somebody, I don't know.
All right, here we go. So I got to piss. Be right back.
Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
Wait a minute.
I don't get butthurt.
Bye. Feel like you're coming down. I've got to keep